Have you ever wondered what Amsterdam is all about? Don't just read about the culture that has accepted cannabis. Experience it firsthand with CS Travel's Sensible Amsterdam Tour with Normal. Travel to one of Europe's most beautiful cities this January for an educational and recreational visit to a city that regulates cannabis like alcohol. CS Travel has arranged an exclusive visit for reform-minded Americans that includes a private tour of some of Amsterdam's most renowned coffee shops, educational seminars with coffee shop proprietors, local law enforcement, members of the Cannabis Retailers Association, and Normal staff. Entertainment includes a special evening at the Boom Chicago Comedy Club, canal tours, visits to the city's many museums, including the world-famous Van Gogh Museum. Don't just wonder about Amsterdam, experience the beauty and freedom of this unique city firsthand with CS Travel and Normal Sensible Amsterdam Tour. Pricing information is available online at coffeeshoptravel.com. That's coffeeshoptravel.com. Or call toll-free at 800-816-1846. That's 800-816-1846. Be a sensible American. Visit Amsterdam with CS Travel and Normal this January. Call 1-800-816-1846 right now to book your trip. More information is available at normal.org. Distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back here to the Audio Stash today. It is Wednesday, December 5th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us here at Normal. Help us end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org to make a donation or join Normal today. You can make a big difference. Just go online to normal.org to find out how. Folks, I have a great audio stash for you today. Our regular Wednesday segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, our cannabis science segment today. We're doing sort of an annual thing with Mitch where we talk about holiday stress this time of year. So this is a holiday stress focus interview with Mitch today. I'm going to find out some of the causes of holiday stress and some of the solutions out there this week with Mitch. Also in the program today, we'll speak with syndicated columnist Froma Harrop about her new column, Obama, Drugs, and Everyone Else, where she calls on Senator Barack Obama to take a stronger anti-prohibition position and also notes some of the past youthful indiscretions of our political leaders out there and the double standard that exists for them. That's all in our interview today with syndicated columnist Froma Harrop. In tomorrow's Audio Stash, we're going to speak with California Normal Coordinator Dale Garinger about everything happening in California. Dale weighs in on Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. We also discuss the ongoing federal raids of medical marijuana dispensaries and also talk about the marijuana market in California. That's all tomorrow in our interview with California Normal's Dale Garinger here in the Audio Stash. On Friday, we have a great entertainment show for you. Lots of comedy and music to get you through this approaching holiday weekend. This weekend, next week, we're going to have an online fundraiser for Normal, the Relegalize online fundraiser. It will be through MySpace, Facebook, and right here on the podcast, we're going to be asking you to participate. We'll have more information on that during Friday's show. So a great week of Audio Stash programming once again. We're going to have some special holiday music treats for you in the next couple of weeks as we get things together and get into the new year. 2008 is really shaping up to be a big, big year for marijuana law reform already. Make sure you get involved. Just visit norml.org. Let's get to our first segment today and talk about holiday stress with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Days here on the Audio Stash, we get the chance to speak with Dr. Mitch Earlywine about the science of cannabis. Mitch is professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany. He's author of Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, editor of the book Pot Politics, and he's got a new book coming out in just a few months called A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. You can also catch a monthly column from Mitch in High Times magazine. Mitch, welcome back here to the show today.
Happy to be here.
Always great to have you here on the program, Mitch. This week, we're doing our annual holiday stress segment. Thanksgiving just took place. Hanukkah has just begun. Christmas and New Year's are just weeks away. And this can all mean it's a pretty stressful time of year for some folks. What is it about the holidays that really ratchets up the stress?
You know, it's never any one thing, but I think a couple of things really contribute. First and foremost, unrealistic expectations. I'm concerned that people go out into the holidays and think, bells are going to ring, birds are going to sing, it's going to be the most delightful couple of days ever. And of course, that really can set you up for a lot of disappointment. The other thing I see consistently among friends and clients is this over-planning where I look at what they're planning to do on, say, the 5 days around any of the holidays, and they're literally going to visit three different people at four different houses, and they're going to be driving seven different times and never going to get any sleep. And then, of course, you end up by the second day wishing that it were already January 3rd.
And is there a particular holiday, Mitch, that causes more stress than others?
There aren't tons of data comparing individual holidays, but at least among Americans and particularly Christians, Christmas gets a big spike in reported stress, and of all things, New Year's also gets one, and the fact that those are only a few days apart makes it a particularly tough time right in that week.
And for me, New Year's stress is like a week later, trying to lose those extra pounds and keep those resolutions. Is that part of the New Year's stress overall?
I think, and then in an effort to really stick to those new, often very restrictive rules they're setting up for themselves, it inspires people to really lose control and binge like crazy the few days before January 1st. So my birthday is December 30th, for example, and it has been traditionally a real big blowout. And so I have to think, well, in fact, if I'm not so constrained about what I'm going to do in the new year, maybe I don't have to feel like this is my last chance to go wild on these days beforehand, and then suddenly things get more moderate. The other big contributor, and I hate to say it, is just lack of sleep. And so people end up staying up really late, sleeping really late, and getting completely out of whack as far as their diurnal variation goes.
Also, Mitch, we all know that what we eat during the holiday season is usually less than healthy, and a series really of delicious indulgences. But does all that fat and other intense intake contribute to stress as well?
Not only the fat, but the sugar seems to be a big driver, and the caffeine. Sugar tends to, you know, send your blood sugar up very high, and then your pancreas is secreting all this insulin and ends up making too much, in fact, and then your blood sugar drops really, really low. You're suddenly hungry, irritable, craving, and then end up eating a sugary thing yet again and back on this roller coaster ride. It's funny how few holiday traditional foods have much protein in them. So whether you're eating latkes or grandma's fruitcake, you really need to make sure you get a couple of eggs or some nice lean meat in there as well, just to make sure you're actually getting your protein needs met. And it's astounding how sometimes just sitting down and having a slice of cheese and resting a little bit can have a wonderful impact on your mood, simply because you've had nothing but carbohydrates for day after day.
Now, also, you know, during the holiday season, many folks out there will end up drinking or smoking to excess. at holiday parties or other events. Is that now an expected part of the American holiday season, that eating and intoxication to excess is kind of expected?
I think there's an automaticity to it. Like, it's like, oh, well, it's the holidays. I have to. And in fact, you don't have to. A couple of things to keep in mind. Alcohol slows THC metabolism. So odds are high, if you are going to have alcohol, you're not going to need anywhere near as much cannabis as you would need when you're not having it. And in fact, I feel like there's so many distractors, people don't really attend to how much they're consuming and their subjective state. So it's easy to notice after a single hit, oh, by the way, I want to wait 5 minutes before I decide if I have another one. And also, it's easy to turn around and go, holy cow, I'm on my fourth beer here, and I don't remember the previous three. And so if we're much more attentive as we go, and really enjoying the process, in fact, we end up consuming less. And often it's as simple as saying to somebody, wow, hey, this is a really interesting cannabis. I enjoy the heady effects, or this is a really somatic body high. Aren't you enjoying it too? And then suddenly you take a little pause to discuss the experience, and you end up consuming less and actually having a better time. Same with alcoholic beverages. Often, if you're going to splurge and have an interesting beer or a nice wine, I just had some things shipped from Australia I'm really looking forward to get. And you taste them and talk about them with your friends, and then you find, wow, it takes a little longer to get a whole glass down because I've actually been paying attention. And then your blood alcohol concentration is going to increase less rapidly, and you're much less likely to run into problems later on.
Also, Mitch, of course, not everyone is consuming to excess. Millions of families will gather for the holidays and consume some alcohol or consume some cannabis together as a family. But for the cannabis consumers out there heading to family functions where maybe everyone doesn't smoke together, what would be good form to take here with the family? Could someone, enjoying a nice holiday treat of some fine American marijuana make others in the family a little uncomfortable? What's the best way to approach that?
I think the key on here is this is a tough time for families anyway, regardless of psychoactive substances. And then anything that's going to alter the way you interpret information is invariably going to add a whole lot of extra variation into the mix. So I think the respectful thing to do is always let's take the folks who are interested in this into a separate area away from folks who really don't approve, so that there doesn't have to be any conflict on this particular topic. But also, if anybody says anything that you think is hostile or they're throwing barbs at you or anything like that, this time of year, let's give everybody the benefit of the doubt. And so, I happen to have an aunt who tends to say things that are, shall we say, not always the nicest. And often it's just a request to have somebody pay attention to her. And I realized, really, this time of year, everybody's either saying, I love you, or do you love me? And if you can translate everything everybody else says into one of those two things, then you'll know how to make it work. So somebody says something like, oh, you guys stepped outside and had to go outside with your very fancy thing. Then you come in and say, oh, we did. I love you. Instead of, let's turn this into the usual banter back and forth, and I'm going to have my tirade about legalization while you make up some insanity about Gateway or other misinformed arguments. Instead, this time of year, it's really, what are they saying? They're saying, do you guys love me? You just went outside without me, right? And then you say, yeah, I do love you, and off you go.
Righto. Well, it sounds like a really good approach there. Holiday stress is common. Even close-knit families will probably end up dealing with it as well.
Again, it's those expectations I mentioned before. I feel like people think this is the time of year when everybody should be, holding hands and singing Kumbaya. And if you've been, to 11 parties already and you just don't feel like that, there ought to be some room to cut some slack on this. And if we can, again, do the same and cut slack to others, it'll go a whole lot better.
Well, Mitch, for me, the only thing that really stresses me out in the holidays is something that only came into play when we became parents, and that's this parade of gifts from the family to our daughter. So let me ask you, Mitch, for myself, my wife, and all of the parents out there, how do you really engage the grandparents and the family and say, I love you, happy holidays, please do not bring over any more plush animals?
It's an interesting boundary, and I particularly with grandparents say, look, I know that being a grandparent has certain built-in expectations. What I was hoping to do was have the girls learn that things aren't all that matter. And what I was going to encourage you to do is, would you have an experience with my kids? Would you guys cook something together? Would you go work at the soup kitchen together? Would you put a puzzle together? Something like that, where it's time interacting and actually an experience rather than a thing. And at least I would say of the grandparents in my circle, 3/4 of them are willing to consider that as an opportunity. And I found that the magnitude of the gifts, if you will, the expensive gifts have decreased, and they're much more interactive things that they can then do with the child. And I feel like that's what I want to do, is enhance that relationship, not turn my children into a bunch of consumers.
Mitch, you mentioned going to the soup kitchen or volunteering. Not only does that contribute to our communities, volunteering is a great thing for us all to do all year. But can making that kind of volunteer effort also help combat stress?
It's astounding, because the actual physiological changes that accompany helping others are really documented, and my wife does some of that research on, you know, heart rate and blood pressure and things like that. But often, even the littlest kids can really get involved. So there's a place near us where literally they just have to pack these boxes and, you know, put toothpaste and toothbrushes and stuff like that in these little boxes to hand out. And even my 3-year-old daughter can toss a toothpaste box into another box, and so suddenly you've got this. And on the drive home, you really do feel like you've done something good. Like, at the end of the day, you can lay your head on the pillow and go, this was a day where I really, really helped. And there's just no substitute for that, and they're certainly not going to create that kind of feeling from, oh, look, I got the new trendy toy, even though it was $100.
And folks can really go local with their volunteer efforts.
If you're into the local hunger groups, the soup kitchens in your own area, I feel like that may be a much easier way to go than trying to get a big national one. And the bottom line often is it doesn't have to be anything that elaborate. If you've got a friend who's just alone these holidays, and you say, hey, we're coming over just to say hi, it's funny how even that can do the trick. And often those are the folks who, it's not that they're really bad off or they need charity or something like that, but that this can be a really lonesome time of year, and just a 15-minute drive-by visit can often make the big, big difference.
You know, in my life, many holiday evenings have been spent with great friends, great marijuana, but in talking about holiday stress and spending time with family, can we treat some of that stress with marijuana?
I've seen it work with a subset of folks, and obviously there aren't a ton of data on this, but particularly if you say, okay, I'm not going to use when I'm around people who I know it's going to be a problem for, or when I'm around people who where it actually isn't going to be a fun buzz for me, and then I'm going to look forward to it. So we're going to actually going to go home an hour and a half earlier than I would normally go home, and I'm going to have this be my reward for not having conflict, for driving sober, for making sure everything's going to go well. And then suddenly you got this thing to look forward to, so that even while you're in the midst of all the hubbub and the carving and the eating and everything like that, you can say, okay, but no matter how bad it gets, I've got my vaporizer waiting for me at home. And I think a lot of folks find a little comfort in that.
So that's the gift that cannabis consumers can give themselves this holiday season.
And I think we should all consider it.
Indeed, Mitch, indeed. Well, I really want to thank you again for joining us this week, Mitch. It's always great to speak with you, especially in these holiday segments. We did this last year. It's just wonderful you allow us to ask the broad variety of questions here on the podcast. Thank you again for joining us this week.
It's delightful, Chris.
Thank you again, as always, Mitch. Dr. Mitch Earlywine is professor of psychology at the State University of New York. He's author of Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, editor of the book Pot Politics. Got a new book coming out this spring called A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. We have links to the books on our website at normalaudiostash.com. And you can catch a monthly column by Mitch in High Times magazine. Stay tuned. We're going to speak with syndicated columnist Froma Harrop coming up in just a few minutes. But right now, we've got this little tune I found up at the podshow.com music website. This is a great little song for the segment we just played. And make sure you don't fall into this trap. Here is I Drank Too Much at the Office Christmas Party.
I drank too much at my office Christmas party. I called my boss. Attention charge is what I got. What she got? I drank too much at the office Christmas party. I told my clients I've had expense reports. She fixed reports. Then I was ordered to appear.
That was the Alice Project with I Drank Too Much at the Office Christmas Party. We have links to that song and to the Alice Project right up on our website at normalaudiostash.com. That track was found right up at podshow.com.
You're listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Next up today, we're going to discuss presidential candidates and their stand for or against prohibition. Froma Harrop is a syndicated newspaper columnist, and her recent piece, Obama, Drugs, and Everyone Else, was widely circulated around the country last week. This column looks at the different candidates' life experience and positions on prohibition, and it notes a disturbing trend for powerful politicians, a trend Froma is asking for these politicians to end. We have links to the column that we're discussing here at normalaudiostash.com. Froma, welcome here to the program today.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Thanks again for joining us today. Senator Obama has been honest about his past use of marijuana and other substances, and he continued his candor recently with high school students on the campaign trail. Froma, your column is very poignant, and it notes many politicians in their past use of illicit substances. So is this double standard where Obama, Newt Gingrich, Al Gore, perhaps even G.W. Bush, never got caught for their use of illegal drugs, but is it understood by the politicians that as long as they were never arrested, they can have a public life that silver lines their youthful experiences?
Well, that's a double or triple or quadruple standard, because you have several things going on here. Number one, you divide the world between people who get caught and haven't gotten caught. People who get caught have something on their record. They have a conviction. And the conviction comes up whenever they're trying to get a job or go to graduate school or whatever. So that's one group. And then you have this weird dichotomy between these politicians who are sort of admitting their youthful indiscretions with drugs, while ignoring that the same indiscretions on the part of young people today and in the past ruins people's lives if they get caught. And I would think that a certain sense of decency would push them to say, well, gee, if I did this and I'm, and I still qualify to be president, then perhaps we shouldn't be locking up people who get caught and ruining their lives.
You mentioned Bill Clinton in the column saying no one really believes he didn't inhale on that joint. But we used to see all of the presidential contenders get asked about smoking marijuana. We don't really see that anymore. Do reporters just don't care to ask in this modern time, or is it enough that many of the politicians kind of deal with those questions in their books and memoirs?
What I think it is that so many people have tried marijuana or harder drugs that it's not even news anymore. And that makes this the continuation of the war on drugs even more absurd. I don't think anyone cares that much. I think that 8 years ago, had Obama said that he had tried cocaine, that would have been a big deal. I think no one's even looking at it anymore because so many people have tried drugs and especially politicians in both parties, that I think the political class wants to take that off the table.
From in the column, you ask why Obama doesn't call out the war on drugs more forcefully and use opposition to prohibition policy as a campaign issue. You know, can a position against prohibition be an asset to a politician today?
Well, I've spoke about this at length with Jack Cole, whom I quote in that column. He was an undercover officer with the New Jersey State Police for 14 years. And he left that experience, you know, vowing to decriminalize drugs, and he helped found Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, which is populated by ex-cops who oppose current drug policy. Well, what he said to me was that politicians have to know that if they adopt that position, they're going to gain as many votes as they lose. So I think it is far less of a get tough on crime position than it used to be. I think people everywhere are smoking pot in every state, you know, in rural areas and urban areas, in blue states, in red states, and I think it's probably hard to find a candidate, you know, someone who went through college who didn't try something.
So, you know, there seems to be almost this Victorian air to American politics right now. I mean, we know about one third of the country has tried pot. So is it this Victorian ideal we're trying to uphold with prohibition, where we try and deny any of our leaders might have tried illicit substances?
I think there's some of that. There's some of a Victorian aspect to it, or puritanical aspect to it. But I also think that the war on drugs has just become big business. There are just too many people are, you know, making a livelihood off it. Judges, people in the, you know, in the jailing business, many police officers. You have the whole DEA, Drug Enforcement Administration, workforce living off the war on drugs. If we had no war on drugs, a lot of people would lose their jobs. They'd lose their livelihood. There's so much money, billions being spent on this war. You have people poisoning, you know, poppy fields in the Andes. I mean, people making planes for the people who are dropping poison on the poppy fields. There's just so much money in this war on drugs that I think this facade of moral outrage has a very strong economic component. There are a lot of economics behind it, and that's one reason why this facade is continued.
And all of those may point to why politicians make some of the public statements they do. You mentioned a few of the presidential candidates who already have been vocal against prohibition: Mike Gravel, Congressman Kucinich, Congressman Paul, Senator Dodd. But you argue that someone not in that group would be the best candidate to really make an impact on prohibition policy, and that's Barack Obama. So why could he do more, and why could Obama have a particular impact on this issue?
Well, I think he's positioned himself as the fresh voice in politics, you know, who's willing to just you know, look at these problems with new eyes and a 21st century sensibility, and do things differently than they've been done in the past. I think a more traditional candidate, such as Hillary Clinton, if she were to say this, people would accuse her of being soft on crime. I think Obama can say this, and people would say, well, you know, he's taking a new approach. Let's look at this problem differently.
So is that part of his ability for impact, is the fact that he is not an entrenched beltway politician?
Well, he's new, and he's young. I think his support tends to be young, and I think the younger you are, the more open you are to relaxing the drug laws. I think he is something of a generational change, and the Clintons have always had these sort of charges of libertinism hanging over their head. I mean, I don't buy them, but you know, it's a concern on their part, and so they want to seem very middle American, I think, Obama is a different kind of guy. He's a different politician. He's young. He's post civil rights type of biracial man. I mean, he's so different from the others.
Froma, you use a very powerful word in describing an increasing attitude towards the drug war. And the word you used is revulsion. Do you think that really is the sentiment of a lot of the country in regard to prohibition policy right now?
I think it's the growing sense. I do write on this subject with some regularity, and my columns appear in conservative places as well as liberal parts of the country, and I'm always struck by how much email I get from writers who had a son or some other family member's life ruined by some drug conviction. And when you read these letters, you can tell that this is not a liberal person. This is not that this is sort of a middle American ordinary person whose kid may have been caught smoking pot behind the bleachers, and all of a sudden he has a criminal record. And I think there's a lot of anger at that. I would dare say it's almost a class thing, because none of these politicians I list in the column got caught, and they were all sort of protected by powerful families, or they took drugs at colleges and universities that looked the other way, that wouldn't turn anyone in. So this is sort of a privileged crew here who use drugs and think that should not disqualify them for high office, but will not come out and say, well, it should not disqualify someone for a lower office.
Or even might keep regular Americans from having a job or keep them out of college. As we know, hundreds of thousands of Americans have lost their federal financial aid for the drug conviction provisions in the Higher Education Act.
That's an enormous hypocrisy. Because that act does not, because under that act, you just, if you're a student who needs aid, you lose your aid. But if you're a rich kid whose father's paying the tuition, and you're caught taking hard drugs, you don't get automatically thrown out of school.
Also, we've explored the racial disparities of marijuana prohibition enforcement across the country. But because of the nature of prohibition enforcement, is it a class issue as well, that wealthier Americans don't suffer the same sanctions of these prohibition violations? I mean, also, a lot of politicians end up growing up in wealthier classes as well.
That's part of it. It's the nature of enforcement. I do think that whole argument over crack versus, the other kind of cocaine, and the racial aspects of that, I think it's very true. Jack Cole thinks that the drug laws as enforced are very racial. And it's also who can afford a good lawyer. Would what sort of a kind of a wholesome white kid, you know, preparing to go to college, would he get the same treatment, you know, before the, you know, before the judge as a, you know, as a black or Hispanic kid from a street gang who is, you know, pulled in for the same offense? I tend to doubt it. I think, you know, I think there is a class thing going on, and I think, you know, for poorer kids, it's supposed, you know, a conviction is supposed to help straighten them out. And for the white kids, a non-conviction, you know, prevents their, you know, their upward trajectory in life from being interrupted.
Froma, also today I want to ask you, because you are a syndicated columnist who has written on these topics before, is it becoming less controversial to consistently write on the issue? Might it be easier to cover Wall Street or the Iraq conflict, but is covering prohibition and the drug war something now that reporters and columnists can sink their teeth into without that hint of controversy?
I think it's less controversial than it used to be. I think this is an issue that has a libertarian angle to it. So there are certain conservatives out there, many conservatives who feel as I do. You know, as I said before, I think drug use, certainly marijuana use, is so widespread that the general public really does not, you know, see some horrible crime in you know, smoking pot. You know, that smoking pot is not, you know, it's not that big a deal, and we should not make that big a deal out of it. It is easier. I think it is easier, and I am surprised, by the way, at how much of my mail agrees with me on this subject, and also how much of it comes from places like Texas and you know, a lot of the most who's the former governor of, was it New Mexico?
Gary Johnson.
Yeah, Gary Johnson, you know, wanted to decriminalize pot. It's been decriminalized in Canada. It's been, California is trying to decriminalize it step by step. And so, you know, the issue has changed. It's not, you know, taking this position is not nearly as lonely as it used to be.
Righto. Well, Froma, this has been a wonderful conversation today. We've been discussing Froma Harrop's recent column, Obama, Drugs, and Everyone Else. We have links to the column at normalaudiostash.com. Froma, again, I really appreciate you taking time to join us today, and I look forward to speaking with you again in the future, perhaps.
I'd enjoy that, and good luck to you. I follow your work. You're a great source of information for me, and, you know, best of luck to you guys.
Many thanks again, Froma. Froma Harrop is a syndicated columnist. Her work appears around the country. We have links to some of her columns on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. Listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. Podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.